Toy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Oh yeah, this is power.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. G'day, I'm Trent and it is wonderful to have your company today for episode
103.
This week on Toy Power, we take a look at our vintage toy line retrospective as we take a look at Cops. We then jump into some retail analysis as Darren takes us through a topic on David Jones. And we'll round out this episode with a show and tell. Joining me today in the Toy Power studio, we've got Frank.
Hoi hoi.
Ben.
G'day, g'day.
Darren.
Hello, everyone.
And a very special guest joining us as well, we've got Luke. Luke,
hey.
Welcome to Toy Power.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you on. Now, as we all know, Luke has to go through an initiation ceremony, which is answering three questions. And the only catch is you've got to answer these as if you are 10 years old.
Okay.
So, what was your favorite movie as a 10-year-old?
Oh. As a 10-year-old,
yep.
I'd say Home Alone.
Oh,
it
nice.
It has to be Home Alone.
And very topical, being the festive season.
That's right, just yep. passed, yes.
Did you see that Macaulay Culkin is actually
how good
back?
Is it? How
he's
good
back
is it?
Yeah. In the acting chair for the Google ad.
And he's changed his name. Have
no,
you heard of that?
No, what?
Macaulay Culkin, Macaulay. Yeah. Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just doubled his name.
He's literally changed his middle name to Macaulay Culkin. So his name...
Macaulay Culkin.
Correct.
Right. That's right.
I think it was through a series of votes and things, and that was the one that came through.
Well, I mean, that's sensible because they're living in the States, but if you're living in Australia and you put out a vote, they built this really impressive scientific ship. Like state-of-the-art ship.
Yeah.
You know, could do all the research, go off all the reefs, do all that fancy stuff in the Antarctic. And they go, we're going to put this out to the popular vote and see what gets up. Number one vote, Boaty McBoatface.
Wasn't that in England?
Was it? I think the ship was. Was it?
Because it was an English
Maybe
thing.
It was yeah, English.
They really wanted to name it the Sir David Attenborough, right?
Yeah, which
so
makes a lot of
sense.
That
was one of the options. But then they're like, oh, it's also a public writing. And that... One, not surprisingly, won by a landslide. The boat, however, is still called the David Attenborough.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It just goes to prove what's the point.
Yeah. Right? I know, but makes for a funny story. All right. So, Luke, your favorite toy line as a 10-year-old?
As a 10-year-old, I would say Voltron.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Love Voltron. Man. Just playing with it and putting them all together. I guess Transformers were my older brothers. Like they always loved it. Voltron was my thing.
Nice.
Yeah. Your Lion Force or vehicle?
Hey?
Lion Force?
Yeah,
or,
Lion
yeah,
Force.
Cool.
Yeah,
wild.
100%.
Wild.
Have you seen the Lego Voltron they've put out this year? A couple
I
of months
not.
Ago? So I've just finished building it. So if you can imagine the original Panache Place Voltron, where you've got the five lions that fit together, come apart, transform into lions, this out of Lego does exactly the same thing. So you've got lions, they connect together just with regular Lego parts and form Voltron. It is insane. Like the head moves, closes up into the mouth and everything.
Nice.
The engineering on the arms is this new joint they developed to take the weight of the lions and the sword and the shield.
Is it called lion's tail? Is that the new joint? What it's called?
It's like, it's full on engineering. Yeah. And the feet of the black line actually connect into the blue and the yellow line legs.
Yeah, wow.
It's a feat of absolute brilliance. Nice. So very, very cool. Check it out online if you
have to do that,
if you want
for
to.
Sure.
And we have a bit of a heads up, Luke, that you're a bit of a writer and an author. So we've got a question here. Who was your favourite author back in the day?
Back in the day, Michael Crichton.
Oh, yes.
Yes,
nice.
Jurassic Park.
Yep, yep.
Loved it.
Yep. Michael Crichton taught me to read novels, essentially.
Oh, really?
Yep.
There you go.
I remember being so blown away by Jurassic Park that I read it, cover to cover. I read it in the book in like 2 days or 3 days.
Yeah.
Realised that there was a sequel called The Lost World.
Oh.
Got that, read it before the movie came out. And then when the movie came out, it was my first disappointment where the book was so much better than the movie. Like, just so much. I was so... The first movie I've ever seen where I've just been like, aww.
Why are they going in this direction? Yeah. What's happening?
Why have they taken a boy and a girl and merged them into one character? Yeah, no, good stuff. That is awesome. All right, we are now going to head into our first segment.
Vintage Toyline Retrospective.
You've got to come back with me.
Where does he get those wonderful toys?
You're an action figure.
You're mucking me, aren't you?
All right, today we're talking about Cops. Set in the near future. How near? Back in 1987/1988? Well, it's not 2018, that's for sure, because as far as I know, no one in this room is part cybernetic. Do you have a cybernetic arm there? Or a cybernetic crotch? As we'll find out, one of the main characters in this story, in fact, had that as one of their action features. So
cybernetic nugget pouch.
Well, yes. It's not prone to cracking, that one. So, look, it tells the story of a special group of police featuring the cybernetic components. Also, the crooks had them as well. Big Boss has a cybernetic hand.
Oh, yep.
We'll talk about some of the other crazy sort of action features that they had. But you had to have the acronym going, didn't you? Back in
that
the 80s.
That was standard for the 80s,
You pretty much had to do it. Mask, you know, took some liberties with spelling command with a K. Cops didn't have to take any such liberties. It was the central organization of police specialists. Fighting crime in a future time. Intent on fighting crime. We should actually play that.
I was going to say,
because they can do it a lot better.
You just started voicing the whole thing. Yeah. So let's.
Cops, central organization of police specialists, fighting crime in a future time, protecting Empire City from Big Boss and his gang of crooks.
I can picture exactly what's going on screen right now.
You've got Long Arm running on the top.
Across the building.
Across the building.
It sounds very Drake
now. Yeah. And some brilliant names as well. One of the evil hench women is called Miss Demeanor.
Yes.
Miss Demeanor. That's right. That is just absolutely golden writing.
Come on. Big catchphrase at the end. Big catchphrase. Come on.
There's the laser in the concrete bridge. Down on Big Boss's car.
And then all the floodlights.
It's crime fighting time.
It is, and there's a catchphrase from that show. It's crime fighting time by BP Vest, or Bulletproof Vest, another very clever name. Interestingly, if a cybernetic dog isn't going to get you to stop, a floodlight will. You know, they all turn around at the floodlight.
Oh, not a light.
Like,
don't bring us into the light.
Must be like Gotham City or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, so this is an interesting origin. So I don't know if you guys know, but there was a group called MGA, or Marvin Glass and Associates, and they were a think tank. So they're essentially a group of toy engineers and designers out of Chicago. And they would come up with these ideas and then pitch them to the big toy companies. And if they got green lit, they'd take a cut of the sort of funds that came out of that toy line. So this was the brainchild of MGA. Other hits that MGA did give out to other toy companies were things like Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Oh, yeah.
So think about the engineering of that came out of an engineering think tank. And the Great Garloo, that was another one. I think that's sort of a 70s toy.
Yeah, okay.
So that, again, came out from them. Cops first started off as the, you know, engineers are naming these things, so don't, you know, be too negative when you hear the name they came up with. It was called Policeman. and quite rightly so, there was an unsuccessful attempt to market it under this name. Then Wayne Cooner and Dennis Opacta got together and revived the concept into Cops, or Cops and Crooks. So if you think about the different figures that came out. The cops all just had the cops logo, but if you got a bad guy, they had the little crooks kind of under the bottom of it.
Different card art at the top.
Different card art for the different factions.
Cops and robbers was obviously already taken.
Yeah, pretty much. Crooks. That's right. So these guys showed it to Hasbro in 1987, and Hasbro successfully picked up the license and ran into it. And this is one of the, this is the kind of the coming towards a bit of the end of the golden era of the 80s. But they gave it the full treatment. Mm. So the full 65 episode season one,
yep.
It was animated by Dick, I think. You know, the same company that did Inspector Gadget. And that intro is beautifully animated.
Gorgeous.
And you can check out Serial Geek for a very good... Serial Geek by James Etoch, the magazine that he put out a number of years ago, has a very good analysis on the intro and the animation that, that makes it up. So you tell me now, coincidence or serendipity? The main character is BP Vess or Bulletproof, and after he attempts to catch the crime syndicate on his own... He gets shot up by the gang and requires, get this, full torso replacement surgery. This actually came out the year after RoboCop.
Yeah, what's your point?
I'm just, you know, one of these conspiracy nuts. So
you think Hasbro basically went to the cinema and thought, what a good idea.
Well, I think it was MGA, but yeah, pretty much.
And his character was always interesting because compared to some of the others that had really obvious, you know, full metal arms and these sorts of things, by default, you just think he's a regular guy. Like, he's got the classic sort of gumshoe, almost trench coat thing going on, and he's, you know, he's the voice of reason at the police station and whatnot. And then, is it a bit like Rio Blast, where he's got like a flip-down chest?
I think it's pretty much you just take off the coat, and he's got the cybergenetic parts.
Yeah. The character you're thinking of is a different character.
Buttons McBoom Boom. Yeah. We'll get to him later. Because, but yeah, he's pretty cool.
How can you forget that name, Frank?
Yeah. So the figures are made up of both the police and the criminals of the future, and as you heard in the intro, they use the tagline, "Fighting crime in a future time." Talked about the packaging. Each figure was pretty well articulated. They were about... six and a half inches tall on average. So I sort of think of these as almost like a bigger G.I. Joe type of figure with the similar sorts of articulation and the metal sort of ball joint sockets you can actually sort of see the pins. Each figure and vehicle, much like the RoboCop line, came with a cap gun firing accessory which simulated the firing of weapons. And what you did is you basically got a little string kind of a paper.
The strip
with the caps in it.
Yeah.
Yep. And the guns basically had a pullback feature. You'd pull back a little metal pin and release it with the spring load, and it would hit the little cap, and you'd get that gunpowder goodness. So, which, you know, I'm sure many of those blew up on people's hands and all sorts of things. We talked. So you could even buy additional caps. Came as a paper roll. Every figure that I'm aware of used the feature, and every vehicle used it. Like, you had Dr. Bad Vibes, who was sort of the mad scientist with the exposed brain. And he had a robot that I think carried the gun. He wasn't equipped to carry guns, but his robot could.
He could design a robot to carry a gun for him. Yeah,
exactly.
He's smart. He's going, that's dangerous. I'm not doing it. Make a robot. You do the dangerous stuff, robot.
Exactly. Outsource all your danger. I'd say the articulation was like G.I. Joe. It had, you know, arms, legs, waist, knee, elbow, and wrist. And then even some came with the bicep cut above the elbow articulation. So pretty decent articulation for the time. All the scales were a little bit different. Like, Big Boss was a big, chunky sort of character. Dr. Bad Vibes was tall and slender.
Well, it's so funny, again, you said these guys is made by Hasbro, was it?
Yes.
Because whenever I think of this line, and I never had any as a kid, but I always imagined like a Playmates thing. And I guess this is before Playmates were really a thing or really famous and stuff. But yeah, because of that really oddly proportioned, you know, villains and bad, like the way they compared to each other. Whereas I think of G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Uniform. All that same sort of uniform and shape and size, basically.
So. Yeah, and I wonder how much that has to do with MGA kind of pitching it to them. And I wonder how much of the development was done in-house when they sort of gave it to them.
Yeah.
So that might have sort of impacted their traditional design aesthetic. Bulletproof. I'm just going to talk to some of the characters now and talk to some of their action features because they're pretty cool. But we had 24 figures were released over two series. And there were a number of figures that did make it to prototype stage that didn't get released. So the line was cancelled before then. But to touch on some of the ones from the first two series, we had Bulletproof, who was the main good guy from 1998 Series 1. And as we said, he came with a really nice cloth trench coat. Mm. The design aesthetic very much borrowed from typical cops and gangsters,
yeah,
from sort of that really 1920s, 30s, Dick Tracy era. Yeah. Obviously then modernized with some sort of cybernetic elements to them.
It's a future time trend.
Of course, it is an undisclosed future yeah time. So when you opened up the trench coat...
Well, isn't that the danger with this sort of stuff? You know, the classic one is the Transformers movie where they say, you know, it is a dangerous time. It is the year 2005.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. And everybody makes a joke about it.
Yeah. That was very clever. So when you opened up Bulletproof's trench coat, it revealed a cybernetic lower torso, crotch, as I said, unfortunately for the man, and his upper legs were also cybernetic. He came with this massive black handgun, and
I thought you were going somewhere else.
He is a person of color. Oh, dear.
Cybernetic.
But the handgun obviously was massive to accommodate the action feature. And then he came with this really cool briefcase that had a handcuff connected to it.
Oh, yeah.
So just to keep going along your lines. But that's a really cool kind of feature, you know, that the super secret briefcase and so secret you need to cuff it to your own hand.
It doesn't matter, they just give him a cybernetic one anyway.
Exactly. Cut it off. And when you could open it up, it didn't seem to store anything from the figure, but inside it had some molded guns essentially, as part of the sculpt. So that was pretty cool. One of my favorites from this line is Buttons McBoom Boom. Not only for the name, but he basically came in a 1920s pink zoot suit, complete with fedora. Yes. And he's in the opening where he's there basically as the muscle as one of the criminals is picking the lock to this jewelry case.
Yep.
And he sees a butterfly floating past and he basically opens up his chest and tries to blow it away and sets off the alarm. But yeah, he was very cool. And you know, sort of think Rio Blast in the action feature. Comes with a futuristic Tommy gun. And of course, it had to be done an oversized violin case to fit it in. Yeah. The violin case is like as big as a piano, but
they really hit all the stereotypes with this.
Yeah. Exactly.
What's that instrument that's bigger than a violin?
Cello.
Is it cello? That they stand?
Double bass.
Double bass. Yeah. It's probably one of those. All right. Then you had Dr. Bad Vibes as well, the mad scientist. He had the white coat, purple boots, and gloves. Orange hair and sunglasses that Davey would be proud to wear. His skull was replaced with a clear plastic skull cap showing a bright pink brain inside. And I think when you actually look at the sculpt of the robot, he's got the same sort of design sculpted brain at the top. His accessory was one of the coolest. It was really almost a whole figure in its own right. This kind of almost sort of 1940s or 50s styled robot. Looks like something maybe that came out of the Jetsons, and he had arms that would attach in, and he could hold the cap gun with the firing action. Each figure had the card file. Now, when you think about Hasbro and you think about G.I. Joe and you think about card files, who do you think wrote these card files?
Oh, Larry Harmer.
It was Larry Harmer. Oh, wow. Now, we're going to get deep here in a minute because this is really cool. When you got Larry Harmer doing G.I. Joe and Cops that happens in a future time, what do you think you're going to get?
Crossovers.
Yes. And if you look hard enough, you'll find a crossover. That crossover is Checkpoint from the Cops line is written as the son of Beachhead. So you've got Beachhead, who is on his bio, Wayne R. Snedden. And Checkpoint is Wayne R. Snedden Jr.
Oh, that's so cool.
Oh, Beachhead.
Beachhead's like code name.
He's a green beret guy with a green mask over his head.
Yes.
He wears like all the army gear. He's sort of like a training militant G.I. Joe character. Okay. And he's one of the more famous
yep.
characters. That's blown me away, man. That's, I am super yeah. impressed. That is just...
And when you actually do the file card of yeah. Checkpoint, it refers to his dad being part of a special ops group.
Oh, wow.
So, cool. That's great. And I think that's just Larry Hama.
Yeah.
You may brilliant. As well. You're doing it.
Brilliant.
You're doing it. That's wild.
I knew Mask was interwoven to G.I. Joe, but yep. now I know Cops. That's, wow, I'm blown away.
Yeah. The artwork was made for each packaging is nice, as you know, sort of those 80s toys
yep.
all had beautiful artwork. So each character has their own sort of comic book styled picture. That was done by Bart Sears, Mark Pennington, and McNabb Studios. And because Hasbro also owned rights to G.I. Joe and Transformers, some of the character names used in both toy lines were also used in Cops, such as Roadblock and Airwave.
Yep.
The code name Bulletproof would be reused in G.I. Joe as part of the Joe's Drug Elimination Force in a subline in 1992, but just for the reuse of the name, no other connection to the character. We also got some really cool vehicles. The vehicles were, for the most part, smaller vehicles. There weren't, you know, any USS flags or anything of that size, no play sets, mostly for one or two figures. Mm. And to that extent, some of them looked a bit ridiculous, like they were cars shrunk down to fit one person in it. So it was just this, you know, tiny little car. But some of them, and like a lot of motorbikes or yeah, flying, yeah. sort of yep. flying bikes,
motorbikes
that sort
is
of thing.
An easy one.
Yeah, easy one. But just to talk to a few, there was the Air Raid, and it came with Bullseye. So a lot of the larger sort of figures or the mid-size vehicles came with a figure. So Air Raid came with Bullseye, and this was probably the biggest vehicle. It was a helicopter, and it had two cockpits on either side, resembling kind of yes. the lights of a police siren.
Yeah,
so one was red and one was blue.
It's in the show, isn't it?
Yeah, it is yep. in the show.
I'm picturing
yep.
it now. Yeah.
yeah, very sleek, very, very cool looking. And I could tell you, everyone on the Cops task force would have been wanting to get to the chopper. Sorry. Just couldn't resist. Then you had the ATAC, which stood for Armored Tactical Assault Car, and that came with the heavyweight figure. That's the one where Dr. Bad Vibes in the intro bursts out of the bank and kind of lands on this armored tank, and,
the top closes
and it drives off. Yep. Very sort of RoboCop-esque. Really, really cool looking, like a tank. And you could fit a figure in the back, and there was a gun turret and a siren, that sort of thing. Nice. So that looked really cool. And then you had the Ironsides with Hardtop. That was actually the Ironsides with Hardtop that I was talking to there. And the ATAC was sort of like a police car that had a gun turret. And I think an area you could store the bad guys in, sort of a bit like a paddy wagon.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then we had 14 figures that got prototypes, and they were done on the sort of card back style. So, you know, they were obviously getting pretty close to releasing a third series.
Can I take a guess that the female figures were amongst the prototypes and never got released?
No, funnily enough. So, again, being very averse to female figures,
yeah.
I think only one was announced.
Who was the female villain?
There were several. So there was Mainframe, Nightshade, Mirage, and
Nightshade,
like I said,
the one I'm thinking
Misdemeanor.
Yeah, he's drawn like a Black Cat type. Sort of like she was a cat burglar. Yeah, cat burglar. That's the one.
Yep. Yeah. But yeah, there were so 14 of them. So they'd gotten pretty far. But just to touch on a few, and maybe this might explain they were running out of ideas. So we had G-Man. G-Man.
Does he also have a big appendage?
The G stands for government, probably not. So G-Man, or government agent, and he came with this big, if you think almost to like He-Man snap-on armor, he sort of had a big piece of snap-on silver armor. Oh, yeah. And in true...
Not strap-on, but snap-on. Oh,
yeah. Put him away.
We're going to have to change the rating on this episode.
70 or not, man.
He had a few beers before he came.
That is true.
In true FBI style, he had on his chest armor, he had the words government agent emblazoned on the front with a sheriff's star. So, yep. Then you had Streetwise, who was a gang control specialist.
Did he have a backwards cap on? please.
No. And a big boombox. Yes. Like, yeah. I'm going to blend in seamlessly with this bad boy. And then it starts playing classical music. And then this is my favorite. You had the great Filoni or Fellini. Great Fellini? Filoni?
I see what they're trying to do there.
Yeah, you can see. You can see the attempt. The great Filoni magician, which was both an affront to Mandrake, Zatara, and all Italian magicians out there, who, beside being a copyright lawsuit waiting to happen, came with literally the coolest accessory ever, a mini Buttons McBoom Boom ventriloquist doll. So it was a really, really, really cool little accessory.
How meta is that? So yeah. It's like a toy of one of the other characters. Oh.
Yeah, very, very cool. And I think you see, if you go online, you see a lot of petitions to basically get the great Fellini done in a figure so you can get that Buttons Boom Boom. But he literally looks exactly like Mandrake.
Yeah.
He is a Mandrake action figure as far as I could tell. So that's pretty cool. And then the weirdest prize goes to Spigot, who was, get this, an aquatic arms specialist. For all those underwater heists that you need to pull off.
So he was the Aquaman of the series?
I don't know. It was like someone was watching Aquaman and the Joker and put them together, because he's not even wearing any scuba kind of equipment. He's just wearing a clown mask.
Just holds his breath.
Yeah, pretty much. Right.
Basically, someone was a superpowers fan for, gee, these two figures would go well together.
Yeah, mash them up. He's wearing a clown mask that would make the Joker proud. And he sports not one, but two handheld shark-designed laser guns.
Yeah.
Dr. Evil, anyone?
Yeah. So the guns look like sharks?
They're like little sharks. It's just so weird. Like we said, several female characters, namely Mainframe, Nightshade, Mirage, and Misdemeanor, appeared in both the cartoon and the comics, but were never released as an action figure, and I'm pretty sure didn't make the cut of potential Wave 3 figures as well. We also had Big Boss's servant, Squeaky Clean, never made into a figure either. And you can probably understand that those sort of more mundane style of characters often don't get a figure. Alfred from Batman also struggled to get a figure, you know, even as notable as he is.
Crucial as a part of they are, exactly right.
Exactly.
No, what kid wants to play with Alfred?
Yeah. Probably none when you think about it. But I
just when you get older.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Like, he's a staple. Like, you need him.
When you realize the story doesn't exist without him.
Yeah.
Literally doesn't exist.
He's a core part. Just finally, I didn't know this, but actually Cops did get rebooted as a cartoon series.
Really?
I think in about 1993.
Okay.
And it's funny because between 1988 and 1993, that reality... American reality TV show Cops came on board. So the name Cops was basically off the table.
Mm.
So I think they called it something else. I don't know if I wrote it down, but I'll go through this anyway. Cyber Cops. That's right, yeah. So Cops. So just to talk about Cops, it was an American television series released by, like I said, Dick Animation City and distributed by Cluster Television. It ran from 88 to 89 and focused on the team of highly trained policemen tasked with protecting the fictional Empire City from the gangsters led by Big Boss, which I think pretty much is all covered in your 1 minute intro. Yeah, toys didn't sell that well. And I know here in Australia, really, I don't remember seeing these on shelves at all. I remember doing an open inspection with my parents. I was looking at houses and, you know, when you'd go through a house, well, what I would do as a sort of 10-year-old was look at the toys that kids had. I wouldn't sift through them, but I'd sort of, you know, check out the toy boxes. And I remember seeing this kid had a number of Cops figures his collection. So that was really... So they must have been released here.
So you stole them.
Yeah.
Is that where the story's going?
That's how... So basically, he asked the agent, do they come with that house?
Yeah.
The agent's like, no. And Trent's like, no, mum, dad, no deal.
Well, when we sold one of our houses, I would have been in my late teens or early 20s. I had a display in one of my rooms, still living at home. And I know this family came through. They were quite interested in the house. And I think they ended up buying it. They had two boys. And I'd come home and they'd be moved. Like, they were all bent on card. But they were looking behind, you know, what's behind there? And I could tell that they'd been, you know, looking at it. It's kind of cool that they were interested. So it didn't sell well enough, and in 1993, the series was shown as reruns on CBS Saturday mornings under the new name Cyber Cops. Okay, so maybe it wasn't a new show. I thought there was a new show as well, but
not that I know.
Maybe they had the, like, sort of Transformers Generation 2 style, like a little bit of if we tweak this and put this computer graphics on here,
maybe
we'll make it look like a whole new series.
Resell
the toys that didn't sell five years ago.
Yeah, clearance them. So that's it. So does any? We might just go around the room, starting with Luke. Do you have any sort of memories of the cartoon series?
Just when I was a kid watching cartoons, I always wanted to be the adult.
Yep.
So this is what Cops reminds me of, like that, and I can't remember another one. They got in like Mech Warriors and it was based for an adult kid.
Yep.
I don't know. For me, I loved it for that reason. I'd get to school and everyone else was talking about Scooby Doo, and I'm like, nah.
Cops is where it's at.
Yep. It's where the action is.
Yeah. Nice.
88, wasn't it? Cops.
88. Yeah.
I was going through my first I'm too cool for toys and cartoons phase in 88.
What?
I stopped watching them. Just to give you a bit of a background on that, I'm the kind of person that if you're not making the toys I want to buy, I'm taking my bat and ball and going home. So in 87, both Master Universe and Superpowers wrapped up. I was out. I was done.
Yeah.
Don't have my favourites.
It took Tim Burton to make a Batman film in 89 to get me back in the toy aisles. I mean, I was looking, but I wasn't buying. Mm-hmm.
For me, and I think we talked about this before the show, like Cops was that mature show of the era. Like it felt really aggressive and really harsh, and like, oh, this is, you know, gritty, and this is so cybernetic, you know, futuristic, and wow, how you know, dark is this show? And revisiting it for this this series, I'm like, oh, it's not as dark, and it's quite colourful and. Yeah. But a really, really cool TV series. Never seen any of the toys. I can't remember seeing the toys on pegs. I know our local friend Adam Harper's got a fair collection of them. So I've seen his collection and it's very impressive. I love the TV series, but never had any interaction at all with the toys aside from as an adult.
Yeah, I think I have vague memories of seeing them on shelves, but even he was only like, you know, the main, what was it, Bulletproof and who's the big?
Big Boss.
Big Boss, yeah.
Came with a ferret accessory.
A ferret? Yeah.
Did it wrap around his...
I'm not sure. Could go up his trouser.
Oh, wow.
Might have been weighing into the metallic metal. Nugget
the
pouch.
Hand, yeah.
Wowzers. So I remember that. I remember the show, obviously. I can picture that intro perfectly. A bit like Ben, I sort of tried to watch a few of it. I say the word try quite deliberately because it doesn't age well. In particular, there's the bad guys are just big, dumb and stupid kind of thing. And there's a character, he wears like sort of prison stripes.
Yep.
And he's like the prototype for Rocksteady as far as I'm concerned. Like he's the muscle. He's not that bright, but can lift heavy things, sort of that stuff. So yeah, a lot of time for probably the intro to the show. I just think it's gorgeous and well done. It's a sort of property that I feel like that could be worked into like a G.I. Joe or something else that Hasbro own, because I don't think you could successfully reboot this line. Not in today's market, and particularly with, you know, some of the things around, you know, police brutality and these kind of issues. I don't think you could have a line like this that is centered around cops, or using that phrase.
Yeah.
I don't think you could do it in today's market. But put the characters' names and into a G.I. Joe figure or a, I don't know, what else do Hasbro own? Most things. You know, I think they could work it into like a shared universe.
Maybe.
Was that Hasbro? Hasbro owned Mattel?
Maybe.
No, yeah. That's happening in a future time.
Yeah, I mean, I watched an episode. I love the animation of the intro.
Yeah.
And I had the same experience as everyone here. It's hard to watch as an adult. I don't think there's enough brand recognition for it to warrant sort of any meaningful revival. Like, why would you use it? I mean, when you've got things like Masters of the Universe that are having trouble getting rebooted, this would have absolutely zero chance, I think. But I think, Frank, to your point, you're quite right. It might blend in if you're doing something else. If you think back about 4 years to when Hasbro did their revolution.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of crossover where they brought together Micronauts and Visionaries and Transformers and G.I. Joe. And I might be forgetting some other things. Yeah. ROM, I think, was in there.
ROM, yep.
Space Knight. So that was a comic book series. It was a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive pack that came out with that. This one didn't make the cut, so that's sort of interesting. But I think that's sort of that's where it would fit in storytelling. But I think it goes to the point. It's probably lesser recognized than all of those ones we just
When you mention it to people, you go, oh, I remember that show Cops. And to your point, they think of the reality TV show. Like
the shaky camera.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, we might wrap this Vintage Toyline retrospective on Cops. We hope you've enjoyed that one. And if you're anything like me when we do these, or when I was actually researching this one, so I did it ahead of time, I was starting to eBay the prices on these. they're expensive.
I was going to say, given it was a short run.
Yeah. Yep. You're looking at about $100 US a pop for a mint on card figure. Loose ones, you could probably get, you know, a basic loose, no accessories figure for sort of $10, somewhere in that space. And if you're looking to get all the accessories, you know, up from there. But yeah, some of them are pretty pricey, and some of the vehicles are pretty rare.
Assuming mainly imports as well. Like
you won't find anything in Australia. Yeah, you won't get any hits. So yeah, it's all $30 shipping for a figure. Yeah. So it's not a lot of fun. So I sort of went, I won't pursue that.
So this is one vintage toy retrospective where you've been able to resist getting all in.
Only because of the price. All right. On that note, we will wrap and head over to our next topic, which Darren wanted to have a bit of a chat around David Jones.
Thank you, Trent. I just wanted to draw everyone's attention to David Jones that may not have heard, people listening, and also our team in the room. So David Jones were bought out about 4.5 years ago by the South African Woolworths company. And since then, there's been a bit of a rebooting around the business and some of their objectives. Well, they've announced that toys are something they want to focus more on, and I think that they've been gradually building to that for the last couple of years. Actually, it seems to be a bit more of a collective vibe when I go in there. So they've announced that, in fact, they've actually rolled it out in their Sydney CBD store, that on level 7 there's a children's floor now that's devoted to toys and other things, and a big part of that is their partnership with Disney. They've gone down the path of having a Millennium Falcon cockpit that you can sit in and really and use the controls and get a real feel for. They've also gone and added some Disney princesses stuff and a Marvel Superheroes life-size replica, or a Marvel Superheroes skyscraper from
Avengers Tower.
Yeah, the Avengers Tower. Yeah, they've gone down that path, and they've also added a Winnie the Pooh forest.
So it sounds like they're really focusing on that sort of experience type thing, as well as just the toys themselves. Yeah,
they are very much focusing on the experience, but they have a deal with Disney as well, apparently, for world exclusive stocks. So not just Australian exclusive, but world, like, only going to be able to get it from David Jones.
Hmm.
From what I've heard from people online that have actually been there, they haven't seen any of that exclusive stock yet, whether or not it's sold out before Christmas, in the lead up to Christmas, and they've missed it, or whether or not that's still to come. But they have seen the experience side of things and have had positive things to say about that, said that it's been really good, really engaging with people, and that kids love it. And, you know, obviously the chance to sit in the Millennium Falcon cockpit or the Avengers Tower or you know, the Disney princess, you know, it's really, really engaging with people. And I think people that have listened to our podcast for a while have heard me talking about the old toy exhibitions that department stores, not only in Adelaide, but around Australia, used to put on back in the 1980s and the early 1990s, around the Lego exhibitions, Lego World Expos. They used to do them annually in Adelaide. It'd be 1 year John Martin's, the next year Meyer, and so forth, and they'd alternate. But also we had things like the Master Universe exhibition at Meyer and the Care Bears exhibition. For a long time, I thought that's what retail's been lacking, and what could possibly draw people back to toys. It's that experience, that kind of thing that you'll never get by clicking a mouse.
Yeah, I agree. So you said this is in their Sydney store, is that right?
Sydney store. They're also exploring the possibility of rolling it out in Victoria.
Okay.
Yeah, so watch this space. And anyone who's seen it in Sydney, please hit us up. We'd love to hear what you think of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of episodes ago, back in 101, we talked about the licensing for Batman, for DC, essentially going to Spin Masters. And this is interesting just to see what they're picking out here. They're doing Star Wars, Disney, Hasbro. They're doing Marvel, Disney, Hasbro,
yeah.
Avengers Tower. They're doing Disney princesses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just interesting to see where, you know, what are the big toy licenses. And we did talk a bit about that in that episode. But again, I think this is just fascinating to see, is Mattel going to make a play for something bigger than DC at the moment? And those options are probably Marvel and Star Wars.
I think part of it, and I think we talked about this in that episode, was that the licenses for, I think, Hasbro's or deal with Marvel, and that runs out in 2020.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, potential bidding war on the cards.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
I think, that'll be fascinating.
So what are our thoughts on this? Is this a good move? What do we think this might do to the sort of toy sales or getting people back into toy stores?
Well, there seems to be a push for this globally. We mentioned a while back about the FAO Schwartz doing a bit of a comeback, and that's one of their focus. You think about the classic scene in Big, and that's what they believe is sort of missing from retail. And if that's coming from a larger sort of, you know, international store, then, you know, the fact that it's being replicated here in Australia is probably a good thing. Whether it will work, I don't know. I struggle to, I guess I'm a little bit out of touch with the, you know, the majority or the market that is currently buying toys, you know, your 10-year-olds and this sort of stuff that a lot of this is aimed at. I think it's cool, but then again, my worldview is very different to theirs. So whether that draws kids in or whether they just don't care because they've got their iPad, I'm not sure.
I think it's a great idea, but they also need to follow it up with their price point, because David Jones is not notorious for being a little bit more expensive in that premium.
They're actually notorious for being the most expensive.
Yeah, correct. So if you can go there and let your kids run free around the Millennium Falcon and the Disney princesses and whatnot, and pick up the toys, oh yeah, cool, that's Transformers, $70. I'll just go next door and pay 50 for it, thanks. You know,
exactly.
And that's the problem as well, is you can literally, while your kids are running around, open up the eBay app, open up your checking app, whatever you use, and look at an item, look it up on the internet, and be like, yep, I can get that $30 cheaper shipped to my doorstep, you know, tomorrow. Cool, done.
I think personally, if this doesn't help them, I'm not sure what will. I think it's really interesting. I follow retail and the behind the scenes of retail as much as I possibly can through the media, and don't have the connections that someone like Ben does working in it. But I find it really fascinating that they're owned by a variety store now. I think that's a totally different regime to previous David Jones owners. And I think given that variety stores, at least historically in the Australian context, used to have much more of a toy focus than we did, I find that fascinating. And would be interesting to see it. For me, the key to how they do is going to be how good the exclusives are.
Yeah.
Because I think price is a big point, and Ben's hit the nail on the head. The way around that is going to be the exclusives. If the exclusives are really good, imagine things like Black Series or Marvel Legends and that you can only get from David Jones anywhere in the world. And I'm not saying that's what it's going to be yet. They haven't given any information on what the exclusives are going to look like. But imagine, theoretically, if that's what it was, that is going to be an enticement.
Yeah, interesting point on price. I was doing some Christmas shopping, or Santa, more to the point, was doing some Christmas shopping for my son. And he wanted the a Lego set, which was the Thanos Star-Lord from Infinity War with this sort of orange ship that the Guardians pilot.
Mm.
And it came with a Thanos. I think he really wanted the Infinity Gauntlet, was really what he wanted. I just walked into Kmart and bought it for $90. No questions asked. There it is. That's the one he wants. $90. Done. I noticed then going into Meijer, so not David Jones, but into the Meijer store in the city, they had 20% off toys leading up to Christmas. So I thought, oh, bugger. I've bought it at Kmart for $90. There it is on 20% off. Oh, wait a minute. The regular retail price at Meijer is $120. So $30 more RRP, even, I'm just doing the math in my head, but 20% off.
Still wouldn't.
$120 is $24. You're still $6 better off at Kmart.
Yeah.
So I feel like Maya, I almost don't buy anything if unless there's a 20% off, because I know it's just 20% more than anywhere else.
Yeah, correct. Just on that, so like Maya notoriously, they had the best Jurassic World display around Adelaide. Like they, it was awesome. Big card displays. They had they were almost first to market with some of the dinosaurs, the big colossal T-Rex and things. Awesome display. But it's like you just like you look at them and you think that's pretty cool. They actually had one on display that you could play with, so you know had a play. But then you just wait for the Big W toy catalog and get it, you know, for $40 cheaper than what the retail price are. And you know that's life, unfortunately.
It is. Now I find it an interesting context because Ben's hit the nail on the head about you get it somewhere else. When I used to go to these toy exhibitions and I used to as a kid, that happened in the school holidays and. It's very true. You'd go right through Rundle Mall from one end to the other. You go to every toy retailer that had toys, and you wouldn't just buy stuff necessarily from the one that put on the exhibition. Like I can remember one year I went to the Lego show. I figured it might have been at Johnny's, and I got some Lego from John Martin's because it was out on special. And you know, you walk out into the big Lego thing, but I bought the Superpowers figure from Toy World. Back in the day, not the Toy World that's in Rundle Mall now, but there used to be another one, not that far from where the Reject Shop is now. But the point I'm making, I guess, is on one hand, it's really important, I guess, to be thinking about what it means for that retailer. But if you can drag someone into the CBD, whether it be Sydney, Melbourne, you know, or who knows, maybe one day Adelaide, if a miracle happens, and you know, floor space isn't an issue for Adelaide department stores. But imagine, you know, that context is that there's flow-on effects for smaller businesses. You know, Toy World is a franchisee operation. You know, the fact that I was in Rundle Mall and I bought a Superpowers kind of Joker figure that day as well may not have helped Johnny's he put on the Lego show, but it helped the toy industry. Mm. And that's something to think about as well, because that matters too.
Yeah, I remember coming out of those toy exhibitions, you know, the Lego one, and you'd be smack bang in this huge Lego area, and invariably you'd go, I want that Lego. And I reckon Mum would have caved and bought me that. I remember, it's not so much a Lego exhibition now put on by Lego in the department stores, but we have Bricolade here in Adelaide. And it's the same sort of thing. You go through and you come out into this retail section, and my son was, Callum was, you know, oh, I want this set. And I'm like, you're not getting it because we're going to go down to Kmart and buy it for $10 less. And that's the reality for, a savvy shopper.
Yep.
And the internet has made that so much easier to compare prices and know what a good RRP should be. Correct. So agree, it's a great move. Pricing is going to be probably the main factor. But it's only going to be good for the industry. And look, you're quite right. I mean, I've walked into Maya and paid full RRP on Black Series exclusives like the Chewbacca from Solo. Yep. When that was there, $40, no questions asked. I bought three of them, I think. I got one for Darren, two for myself. And then, you know, invariably, it was 20% off and there was still some in stock, but I wasn't willing to take the risk. So they will get you on those exclusives at the high price point, which is I guess, the whole purpose.
And I think if they've got something gone like that, you're less likely to get it at the 20% off because you're going to get a lot more foot traffic coming in for the experience.
Yeah.
Mm. So if it's exclusive stock, I think, you know, it'll move a lot quicker. And you probably inevitably create a secondary market for people that are not in Australia that want, you know, something from David Jones if their exclusives are that good.
Yeah.
But even taking away, like, price matching, like, Lego's really expensive non-stop now. I don't know what it was when my parents used to buy it for me, but I don't think it was what it is now. Like, a Harry Potter set's $100 wherever you go. Yeah. Like, it's full
of... But that's because it's licensed. You look at that size of the Harry Potter set that you just mentioned, like, let's say it's one of the big mansions or whatever, and then you size it up equally with the city set that has no licensing, that's just... completely straight out of the Lego factory.
Yep.
And you'll pay $50 cheaper. You'll get 10 more minifigures. You'll get 3 vehicles.
Yeah, okay.
You'll get everything, you know, everything under the sun for a lot less because of that property licensing. That.
I reckon if you do apples for apples with Lego sets, I reckon it's pretty good value for a standard set. the license stuff is ridiculous. Huge. Like a Star Wars set, like you say, you'll pay $30, $40, $50 more, brick for brick, for something like Star Wars. Like, I'll look at a $50 Star Wars set, and it's like a, you know, what is it? Yoda's hut with a Luke, two minifigures, and it's $50. I look at what I can get, you know, in the Ninjago line. I can get like a full-on dragon. Like this, I built my son this dragon that he got from his grandparents. And it's got, you know, four minifigures. It's got a, you know, fully articulated dragon.
All that profit goes back to Lego instead of, you know, whoever the license holder is.
So but, just push our children to
that's brand. Right. Check out this one. Harry Potter train.
Check out this dragon.
Exactly. All right. Awesome. Thanks for taking us through that. That's some good insight, Darren. And thanks, everyone, for sharing your thoughts on the retail situation in Australia. Final segment today. We've got a bit of a show and tell.
Show and tell.
So, Ben, this was the brainchild of Mr. Ben Sachs here. And he said, bring out of your collection, it can be, you know, old, it can be much loved, doesn't have to be valuable, but something that you treasure, something that means a lot to you. And we'll just go around and chat. You can probably explain it more eloquently than I just did.
I'll just kick it off with mine, hey? Like, so I listen to other podcasts and they, you know, like to bring their latest hauls and things. And I really like that aspect that they're presenting each other with their latest hauls and things. So I thought, why not, you know, try that on our show? And why not, you know, bring something along from whatever era you want, whether it be yesterday, you bought it yesterday, or something that, you know, is nostalgic for you. So today I'm showing the group. I brought a little G1 Transformer.
Right? How many guns does it have the top?
Target Masters, man.
Yeah, so this is Generation 1 Transformers Quake, okay? He is a Decepticon Target Master released in 1988. So I'd say he's probably about 4 inches in length in tank mode. He's probably 2 inches high regular, and then another 2 inches on top of that with his guns stacked on top of each other. So he transforms from a Leopard battle tank to robot and vice versa. So just listen to that.
That's good. Good joint. Solid.
That's what we're talking about with joints. So the reason for my choice of him over other figures is because this guy is the only 80s toy that remained 100% complete and in great condition from my childhood.
Oh, nice.
Right?
Nice.
So all my 80s toys got sold out, given away, blah, 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 you know, whatever happened to it. But they're no longer in my possession. So this one's the only one of, you know, that's lasted, that survived. And he is magically 100% complete, which is astronomical.
Even the stickers on it look really, really good.
I like putting stickers on, so you can see where it came from. So he comes with two Nebulon Target Master weapons, which have a very basic transformation from robot to gun. The black one, which has a double-barreled gun point, is called Heater, and the purple one is known as Tip Top. He also came with a regular gun that can be used as the turret for his gun tank mode, or a regular gun in his robot mode. His sticking condition isn't too bad after all these years, and the fact I've somehow managed to hold on to all three of his weapons is a miracle in itself.
Absolutely.
So Quake has a maroon and grey colour scheme in tank mode, and once in robot mode, he promotes a navy blue chest. His transformation is fairly simple, but he has great joints that retain tight even after all these years. Due to his transformation, he has several areas to place the Target Master weapons on him in robot mode, and my personal preferred combination is him holding his regular gun in one hand, his black Target Master on the side of his arm, almost looking like claws, and then his purple Target Master on his back, creating a look as if his gun or sword sitting on his back. The Target Masters have holes in them so you can stack the weapons on top of each other to make a giant weapon in one if one chooses. As stated, this one is one of the later G1 figures. He comes with, he was never seen on any of the cartoons and was a very brief character showcased in the Marvel comic series. So many collectors probably wouldn't actively pursue him either now or back in the day. But as I had him as a kid, and the fact that he's my strongest surviving toy, with his Target Master being their own characters, it gives this toy a lot of playability, and I know for a fact he was well played in my collection.
Nice.
I think these even, I think they come, looks like they're the standard sort of 5mm peg size. So like you could conceivably get weapons from some of the newer Transformers.
Oh, don't tempt me.
And they'll actually like connect into this.
So he's only ever had one re-release of this character, and Trent Frank picked him up.
Yep.
And I was so close so many times to grabbing him, but I never did.
In which line?
In the new Target.
Yeah, the
Headmasters? Battle for Cybertron.
Yeah, well, I don't know what
yeah, the, not Power of the Primes, Combiner Wars.
Oh, Combiner. Yeah. Yep, yep,
and,
okay.
And it's extremely faithful, like in terms of the colours of the head sculpt. I don't think he comes with two guns,
but
they've turned him into a headmaster for the sake of that line. And yeah, now I don't think I've ever seen the original of where it comes from. I still picked it up because it's a Decepticon, but that's awesome.
Mm.
Good work.
Cool.
Any surprises on what Darren bought in? Any of our listeners have a guess? Just talk to your speakers right now.
I reckon they're going to be stunned when I reveal what I brought in. But I just wanted to say before I do that, thank you very much, Ben, for brainstorming this segment. I think it's great. And love the unique spin that you put on it too, rather than being driven by just what every other podcast is doing. You know, why not show him some nostalgia?
Yeah, well, I think that, because I think that is our real strong point, you know.
Absolutely. So, it's what motivates us to do what we do. So having said that, on that nostalgic note, not that anyone can see, I'm holding it up here pretending we're on video now, but we're not.
I've never seen one of those.
What is that? Strange figure. It's from some lost toy line.
Yeah.
Forgotten. Long forgotten.
Hopefully not too lost and hopefully not too forgotten. I have brought in the original He-Man from the vintage 1982 Master Universe toy line by Mattel. So the thing about this is, it's not the one that I received in 1983 from Father Christmas. That one's probably, you know, lost too many wars too long ago to make the trip.
Amputee.
Yeah, sadly. Sadly, double amputee by now. But it's exactly like, or pretty close to like it. It's not in the best of shape. I've probably got versions, in fact, I have got versions of this figure that are in much better shape, because I have this thing when I find a good conditioned vintage original He-Man, I generally break down and buy it. It's just the way I am.
No, it's I was just looking at it in comparison to mine. My He-Man you'd almost call him a redhead in terms of the color of his hair.
Yeah, a lot of them are.
In comparison to this one here I'm holding, which is very, very blonde.
His arms almost look like they faded a bit as well.
Yeah. To quote American Psycho, you're a bit of a dirty blonde, aren't you? More of a dirty, because he asked for a redhead and she comes in a blonde. Sorry, let's go back to the show.
I remember that scene, that's funny. But yeah, look, I think the reason I brought it today is because I actually think it says a lot about the character. Like I said, it's not in the best of nick. He looks like he's battle weary. He looks like he's seen quite a few wars, and I think that works well for the character, and you know, makes it a reasonable representation. Like I said, it's not the best conditioned original vintage He-Man that I've got.
Oh, at the very least, he stands up well, which
he does stand up well, and that is a positive for anything that age now. And for me, what that character represents, what that figure represents, is that's the figure of my childhood. It's the one that I wanted in 1983. I remember saying that I was going to ask for that from Santa or Father Christmas, and I remember Mum saying, no, you're not having that, you know, they're all ugly, you're not getting into that line, don't want it. And basically, you know, I can remember going to the Magic Cave and asking for it from Father Christmas and thinking that I wouldn't get it. Because I was waiting for the penny to drop at any point for Mum to say, no, don't get it for him.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, you know, Christmas morning, Father Christmas basically went to Mum.
Take that, Mum.
So I'm pretty happy. So that for me is the figure of my childhood.
Very cool.
Beautiful.
Brilliant. Well, I have brought in probably one of the coolest figures I used to play with when I was little. And it's Marshall Bravestar.
Yeah.
Bravestar.
Loved it.
Bravestar.
Yeah. And the thing is, I remember playing with the figure way before the cartoons. Yeah. I don't even remember much about the cartoons, to be honest. But I know that I loved it. And I guess now it's like Firefly for me. Like, this is Firefly back in the day. Like,
pretty much.
Clearly,
the cartoons came out later, from what I read.
I don't know. I've got all of them. I brought a couple, but let's just focus on him today. So I'll pass him around. You can have a bit of a look.
Relatively complete from what I've seen. Does he also come with a rifle? Like a longer rifle?
Maybe that's gone missing over time.
But he's got the iconic sort of blaster that has blaster on top, blaster on bottom. And that actually came with a real electronic life-size or child-size version as well, which he has as well.
Yeah, I've got the gun. Got it at home.
And
so
it did...
He's in great condition, I've got to say. Paint is immaculate. The joints are tight. And obviously he comes with the hat and the blue...
The vest, yeah.
Vest. So, yeah, absolutely terrific example for a figure that debuted in 1987.
Yeah.
And it's something a bit different as well, the 8-inch scale, like yeah. the bigger sort yeah. of figure.
Yeah, but, action feature still works.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I tried that out just...
It's awesome, man. I've very rarely touched Brave Star figures.
Yeah.
So that's really cool too that you've brought him along tonight and shared with the group.
What's really interesting, Luke also brought in a Tex Hex, which is down there, but something I reckon I didn't even pick up on until I started looking really closely. There is, in fact, a lot of reuse on Brave Star. So the Brave Star shirt is the same, and I think if you look, gloves, even maybe legs and boots... pretty much the same as what's on Tex Hex. And so there is, funnily enough, when you actually look closely, a fair bit of reuse, which is what, you know, Mattel was
obviously... I was just going to say, that doesn't sound like Mattel at all.
Yeah. You know?
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Look at that.
And I
it's just different
paint. Yeah, but to their credit, the boots, I think the boots are slightly different sculpt from the from the knee down. But to their credit, I didn't pick up on it. Like, I had no idea as a child that they were different sculpts. They'd done enough... color changes and enough, you know, the vest is different, so you put that on top of the shirt.
Yeah,
no one's gonna know.
Yeah,
yeah. Very clever and very cool figures. Yeah. And we talked about it in our 100th episode, the Brave Star Fortarium, which takes it out. It's pretty much one of the tallest and widest playsets, probably excluding USS Flag from that era.
Mm-hmm. And the Hive,
yeah, it's another big one. But you know, obviously. Fitting 8-inch figures. Had to be big. Yeah, awesome. Thanks for bringing that, Luke. They're very cool. So I've got one here, and I said to everyone before I sort of unveiled it, I said, you're probably not going to guess what I brought in. And Darren said, was it the Casey Jones that you took into the 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie? Yeah. All right. You know me too well. So it is, it's not something that's terribly valuable, but it is my childhood figure. And I've upgraded a lot of figures over time that almost my childhood figures have sort of morphed into. And I've almost sort of... We talked about this on one of the episodes. I've sort of almost cast them aside. I'm going, if I can find a better one.
Why not?
But this one just has such great memories for me. You know, going to see that 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie at the cinema. Knowing that Casey Jones was going to be in there. I think I've told the story of... I stayed up. My brother saw one of the video clips on Rage.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I saw this video clip and it had the turtles in it. And this is back in the day. There's no internet.
No way
to see this stuff. I just wanted to see what the turtles looked like moving before I got to the cinema. And I stayed up till like 3 or 4 in the morning watching Rage. And there was no, it wasn't even going to come on. Like, there was no chance it was going to be on. But this one, he's missing. So this is Casey Jones, the first... really and only, unless you count the wit changeable one from movie 3, figure from Playmates, came series 2. Mine is missing the second baseball bat. He actually came with 2 baseball bats, but I lost one of them. But he's got the golf club. He's got the golf stick that's all taped together and the broken bat, you know. And to have the two
and he's got the baseball bag. Bats.
Yeah, he's got the bag, which is kind of hard to get him to stand on that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, very much from the Eastman Laird comic books where he comes out, you know, hockey sticks blazing. Baseball bats blazing. Yeah. You know, really cool figure. Great design on the head.
Oh, I love it. I love that.
Yeah, just such a cool looking face.
It harkens back to my favorite thing about the early line is the white eyes. Yep. You know, they could have gone and sculpted gone. Pupils in there, but they didn't. They went with the comic book thing. And I also think that harkens back to the blue wash through his hair.
Yep. Yep.
That's a bit of a comic book throwback to show depth and things. I just love it.
One thing I will point out about this particular figure, and I'll just show you everyone here, the wrist swivels. Yep. This wrist here with the white bandages actually snapped off. Snap through the joint. And my dad, he's an ex-tech studies teacher, put in a metal pin, drilled little holes, metal pin, and you wouldn't know. It works absolutely beautifully.
He's like a character from Cops now. Like, he's...
pretty much cybernetic. Metal plate. Now, I will... I will pass him around, but just a quick warning. He's a bit sticky.
Yeah.
Like, he's just... I don't know if that's a thing for Casey or if that's just my childhood toy. From that kind of era. But
what a lot of people don't realise is the 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film isn't the only time he's been to the cinema. When Trent and I went to see Out of the Shadows, he had it with him as well.
I did, yeah. That's right. Yeah, no, go back to an older episode.
Those early Turtles figures do, when they've been exposed for so long, they do get a little bit tacky almost. Yeah. I don't know, something with the plastic, all my sort of Series 1 stuff that I had as a kid, same thing.
Yep.
And
yeah, I don't remember, like, you know, what playing with him outside.
Because, I mean, some of the upgrades I've picked up don't seem to have that.
And it could be just like maybe the first, you know, couple of production runs that did it. Yeah. And then they've sort of upgraded their plastics along the way. As we know, they were pumping these things out, you know, quite a lot.
Oh, yeah, and they were reissued a number of times.
I have a Batman figure, Glow in the Dark. So he's from the DC Direct line, I think, one of the, you know, let's say 2008 or something, right? And he's just absolutely nothing but glow in the dark. His whole thing glows in the dark, and then he's got the black cowl and cape and everything. He is like a magnet. He's like...
Lint magnet?
No, like just... He is just so sticky. Yeah. He is just like a glue stick in the shape of Batman. Like,
glue stick Batman.
Like, so I do not understand what that plastic... Maybe I thought it was the glow in the dark aspect of it or something, but it is... it's almost disgusting. Like,
yeah, you don't want to move it.
Yeah,
first is cleaning up the streets of Gotham. Now you can clean up your entire office with your glue stick Batman.
Yeah. Just like you got a bit of lint on your shirt, rub him over.
Yeah. It's funny that you followed him up with Bravestar as well, because in the animated series, same voice actor.
Is that right?
Yeah, 100%. Really? He did there Krang as well. So, yeah.
Good bit of trivia. Nice. Wow. Just threw that in like there off the cuff.
Well, I knew he did Krang. Yeah. I didn't know he did Bravestar. That's cool.
There you go. All right, I went a little bit different with mine. In the sort of description Ben had for this, he said it could be like both old or a newer toy. And this one for me, I've gone with the Marvel Legends Tiger Stripe Wolverine from pretty much just, last year, 2018. So very new toy, but for me, this is the Wolverine figure to have. Yeah. There have been loads and loads and loads of Wolverine toys over the years, and I've sort of... Wolverine's always been one of my, like, go-to Marvel characters. But when I saw this one, I was like, do you know what? They finally got it right.
Yeah.
He doesn't come with a rocket launcher. He doesn't come with a tiger-themed car. He's not packed in with Spider-Man or something stupid like that. This is 90s Wolverine. You think of that wonderful X-Men animated TV show. This I can hear Steve Blum doing the voice already. I've seen some variations where people... have actually pulled the his big black ears, and they reckon they're too close to his head, and they've sort of
fanned them out to get a little
bit more comic book accurate.
Yep.
Either way, gorgeous. I've actually you talk about parts sharing with Bravestar. Marvel Legends obviously do a lot of the same thing, but people have actually noted that his arms are actually deliberately bulkier. The biceps on them are just that. You think about the scale, but they're that little bit thicker than other legends of the same sort of waves. And he's got the butterfly articulation. The claws are individually articulated, so they can be fanned out or straight up and down. It is the Wolverine figure as far as I'm concerned. And anyone who's a Wolverine fan will probably have a very sizable collection, but I'm one and done as far as I'm concerned on that. For such an iconic character... until they start doing, you know, a masterpiece-esque version and have huge, real-life-looking Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
This is the one for me.
The definitive version. I reckon Toy Biz, they released a number of Wolverines along the way, and they actually got to the point of saying, this is second edition Wolverine, third edition. I reckon they got close to eighth edition, if my memory serves me correctly, on the single card.
Yep.
And that included things like Weapon X and, you know, totally different versions, which are legitimate.
Mm.
But, to your point, and then obviously there's a whole heap of Marvel Legends that have been released since that got going. That is the epitome. It just sums up that sort of early 90s version of Wolverine.
I love how they've captured the anger of the character.
Face-to-face sculpt without looking like he's, you know, pushing one out.
Yeah.
So. I have to say the paint apps are beautiful. It's like, really crisp. I can't fault anything of the paint apps. So this Wolverine, is there any variants for the brown? You know, the brown
No, they haven't done it. I wouldn't surprise me if it's, like, not far away.
Yeah.
But no, at this point they haven't done the done the brown version. But that'd just be I'm sure there'll be some sort of con exclusive at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, and mine, and I don't know if it was a factory error or whatever. Yeah, so the claws can actually come out, as Trent has just demonstrated.
I thought
No, no. So they're almost on like tiny little peg joints, I guess, or tiny little ball joints.
Just leave the middle one up.
Yeah, exactly. Boom, you can do it. Brilliant. And, like and ironically enough, it actually he actually comes with alternate hands that are just regular fists, so they don't have the claws in them.
That's wicked.
But given you can take the claws out, you sort of got to wonder why. Yeah. Like, would you don't just take the claws out if that was your preference? And again, I don't know if it was a factory error, but mine came with a what is it, seventh claw? Like just a spare one. It was just floating in the box.
But that's cool. I think absolutely. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I think it's very... If it was deliberate, well done. If it was a factory error, then, you know, yay for me. So, so yeah, that is... mine.
Beautiful. Bit of show and tell. I like that. Good good call, Ben. Always some ingenuity in the segment choice, so well done.
I'm glad. I love what everyone's brought tonight. It was awesome to have Nick on to have the Brave Star. Luke. Oh, my God.
You're right.
Sorry.
You call me
again. I don't know where I got Nick from. Like, Luke, awesome. I love the Brave Star. Very... niche line for me that I never really... I love the cartoon, never really got into the toys much, so it's awesome to see ones out of the box other than Trent's Mint on Card collection that I've seen a few times. So yeah, wicked, man. Thanks for bringing those. That's so cool. Worry.
Beautiful.
And where can we find you? Where can we find you around the place?
Yeah, tell us a bit about yourself.
A little bit about me.
You're an author.
So. Yeah. So I've written a book, very Ready Player One esque. So, you know, boy playing computer game, only way to do income... And yeah, unlocks a quest and goes from there. So sold it at Supernova. I've actually got one for each of you tonight as well.
Oh,
so
I'll have one
just for, you know, giggles. But yeah, apart from that, yeah, love writing it, writing a sequel and yeah, love pop culture and everything like that. So yeah.
What did you think of Ready Player One? Both the book or the movie?
I loved the book more.
Yep.
A lot more iconic sort of 80s references rather than sort of just pop culture from everywhere, like where they grabbed it. But no, I loved it. I think Spielberg was the perfect person to do it.
Agreed.
And the CGI in it was just spot on. Like, try and make that, you know, when the book first came out.
You couldn't do it justice, could you?
Yeah. Not at all. So
we actually had a last episode or a couple of episodes back. We did a top sort of, you know, top toys of the year,
yeah,
and one of our segments is top movie, and that actually Ready Player One did really well in that segment, along with Infinity War.
Yes.
So it got a lot of votes, probably almost the same as Infinity War, which speaks to, I guess, Spielberg back at his best.
It was through the eye of, I guess, the teenager again. Like, Spielberg's doing it right, and he's great at doing that. But people that love the book kind of, I guess, shat on it a little bit, like. It's either a love or hate movie.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I don't know. So, but yeah, that's I read the book.
So what's the name of your book?
One Life.
One Life.
One Life, because you only get one life. So, if you are in Adelaide, you can get it from Adelaide Dimmicks.
Oh, nice.
And also at Glenelg. And apart from that, you can get it on through the Kindle store. Just look up One Life Luke Green. You'll be able to find it on there. So
beautiful.
Yeah, awesome.
Good stuff. Cool. That is awesome. Thanks so much, Luke, for coming in and sharing this episode with us. Really great to have you on. And bring in Brave Star. Yep, you got that. Not of approval from this group.
Yeah, my pleasure.
You're just one of the gang now, aren't you? How to blend in easily with this group.
Just before we wrap up, how far along are you with the sequel?
I would say hopefully by the end of 2019 it will be out.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. The goal is to have like a part of a series. So.
Well, don't forget us. You'll have to come back. When you're launching it. I'll put
yous all in the book. You're in there now. You're done. Sort of.
Canon
fodder. That'll get you back. Yeah. That'll definitely get you back on the show.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Ben died very quickly.
That guy that called me the wrong name. Yeah.
Poor Ben was the first to go.
Yeah. Ben's in the book, but his name's Simon.
Great. Well, on that note, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Luke, for coming in. Thanks, everyone, for a great episode. Had a lot of fun. And we will catch you around. Before we go, just a quick shout-out to all our Patreons who've been so awesome over the last couple of weeks with all the sharing on our Patreon page. But, yeah, big shout-out to John Caulfield, Jose Gonzalez, Chris Wisdom, Brett G, Joe Hayes, Colin Betts, Malcolm Hobbs, Does10, Davey Damage, Casey Hancock, and Trent Barrett. On that note... we will see you around the toy aisles.
Thank you, one and all, and until next time, good journey!
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/Toy Power Podcast. @Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. or have your say and email us, toypowerpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but yeah.